The Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast is proud to be sponsored by Dr. Spork's 3D Terrain. From retro greenskin outposts to elven fortresses and obelisks, this is hands down the best nostalgic scenery you'll find out there, and all at stupidly reasonable prices. Check it out for yourself by heading over to bedroombattlefields.com/spork, that's S-P-O-R-K, and turn your tabletop into a scene from White Dwarf circa 1994. Andy Chambers not included. Brought to you by bedroombattlefields.com, this is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Do you remember Fred Reed's Howling Griffin Army in White Dwarf back in the mid-90s? For a lot of hobbyists at that time, it was just one of the armies, one of the features in the magazine that really stood out and really stuck with you. And all these years later, 30-odd years later, it's still being talked about. But one person who took that nostalgia a step further is Johnny Watson. Johnny set out to recreate Fred's army as a personal tribute, and in the process ended up speaking to Fred himself and even appearing in White Dwarf. In this episode, we talk about that project, about Johnny's route back into the hobby after time away, and how running his YouTube channel is supplementing and enhancing his enjoyment of the hobby. I caught up with him at his hobby desk, so I decided to kick things off by asking him what he's up to right now.
But my main task at the moment is the Call of the Crown Challenge. So this is the first year I've entered it. I've always been a bit scared of it, to be honest with you. Trying to paint up a Warhammer army is a daunting task. So I've never sort of put myself to it, in the sense of trying to bash it out that quickly. So I thought, no, this year I'll try to challenge myself and get an undead army painted. And I am now, that's 3 months in now. So I've done three units. What were they? There was the skeletons, a unit of a rock lobber and a wizard. So I've been to be fair, it's been quite easy. Skeletons aren't the hardest thing to paint, but I did that on purpose.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, are those miniatures you've had for a while then, like sitting in boxes, or how did you get them?
A mixture. I picked the skeletons up on eBay. And I had a few things laying around, like the rock lobber. I had that for a long time. That's just been sitting in my bits box. But most of it's just been eBay purchases, to be honest with you. So probably spending over the going prop rate for them. But you know, I wanted to have an undead army. And that's where I'm going with it. And the reason I chose the undead army for the challenge is because I think it's probably the easiest army to do. In terms of painting, you know, skeletons are just not hard. So I think I could bash them out. And bearing in mind, I'm always thinking with my, when I do my hobby, I'm always thinking, what can I get away with the kids in the background? How much time have I got to do this? So trying to do a challenge to the last 6 months, I've got to choose an army that's not going to be like if I chose a Bretonian army, I just don't think I'd fail probably, because you need a little bit more time to get that done, don't you? So whereas the skeletons are nice, it's just dry brushing, finished, you know, maybe do a motif or something on them and that's it. So, yeah.
Yeah, you've got to make these things sustainable and realistic, don't you? So,
yeah, you've got to work your hobby around your real life.
What was it, one of Joe Abercrombie's characters, was it the Bloody Nine, was his thing not, you've got to be realistic? I can't remember if that was one of his quotes. I don't know if you've read any of the books, but shout out to the Bloody Nine.
Absolutely.
So I had the undead, well, a very small rudimentary warband from the undead of that era when I was younger. I had the skeleton chariots and the box set. You know, the skeleton infantry. And then I had some of the metal zombies. I think, like, in those days, you know, when you were buying the blister packs, three, potentially four max, your units were very small. Like, if you got eight, that was a horde. So I remember, like, the zombies, one of them was really annoying. I think he was the musician. So he's got this, it's like a slice of large bone as his gong. Yeah. And he was I think if I was a bit older, I would have just bent it back in a way that it was more balanced, but you just couldn't get this guy to stand up. And I put it down to flavour at that time. You know, he's a zombie, he just falls over. But really, the miniature was just falling over all the time. I don't know why I did this. Like when I found all that stuff and I was actively getting back into the hobby, I just punted it all on eBay. And I don't know what the rush was for me to just like get rid of all that stuff. Like I got rid of a pretty decent Lizard Man army for no apparent reason. I had like a Warhammer 40k second edition, like a pretty decent Space Wolves force with two tanks and stuff. Just got rid of it all. Yeah.
No. I think it's hindsight though, isn't it? You look back on it and you think, oh, I shouldn't have done that. But at the time, probably then, this whole resurgence of old Hammer wasn't really a thing. So you're thinking, when am I going to play this? I know that's the thing for me, that I've only just sort of fairly recently learned, oh my God, I don't have to play the new games. I can play the old games. And I think a lot of us are only just sort of coming up onto this sort of realization that, hang on a bit, I've got all the books for this one game. Why have I put that to one side and now just play the new edition and spending more money? So it's probably the mindset that you was in at the time, thinking, well, I'm not going to play this anymore, so let's just pass that on and make some money so I can buy some new stuff. That's how I certainly was thinking about it at the time. It was only until I sort of met Josh from Crown of the Commands that I started thinking, oh bloody hell, actually I really like these games. Why am I not doing this? Why am I not playing the games I've already got on my shelf? It's just a weird realization. And I've been back in the hobby for a fair bit of time before I sort of made that realization. So yeah, by the way, Josh says hi. He texts me to say hi to Matthew. I haven't spoken to him for about a year.
Well, hello, Josh. I'm sure there's easier ways for me and Josh to say hello to each other. But
you can talk through me. It's okay. I'm a safe person.
We need to schedule a podcast episode and we could pass messages over to each other.
Absolutely.
So your YouTube channel, Johnny, what I noticed curiously about that, like I went back, 6 years old now, so I'm assuming that was 2019, 2020 when you kicked things off. Was it a pandemic, baby?
No, it was before the pandemic. So I got back into the hobby probably, I don't know, I think probably around about 2015. I was working in a job and it's one of those jobs where I weren't enjoying it much, and I was just sort of flicking through YouTube, you know, should be working, but I was flicking through YouTube in the corner hiding, and I come up with I searched Warhammer for whatever reason, don't know why, just come into my head, and then I see this just full of videos of Warhammer, 40,000. Oh, this is interesting. I started clicking through it and really, really got into it. And then it just clicked that bit of my brain again. I was like, hang on a minute, I want to get back into this. I don't know. Did you ever start looking on YouTube for Warhammer? And can you remember when you did that?
So it was 2017 2018, sorry, that I got back in. And God, I think I've talked about this before, but now forgotten the exact catalyst. So details are now hazy because it's.
Yeah, I mean, same for me. It's very hazy, but it's really, really interesting actually. So obviously, we'll come onto the YouTube thing in a minute. But when I started watching YouTube about the hobby, there was a very different landscape of people doing videos back then. And people that really either, I don't know where they've gone, they've disappeared or they've stopped doing the hobby, or I don't know why, but there's a number of channels out there that were big channels, the ones that really kicked it off. So they probably started in like 2009, their channels, and they were big stuff. Like, do you remember someone called Temple Crusader?
Zero no, my, my knowledge of YouTube is very...
Yeah.
Limited, so.
Well, obviously, Mini Wargaming. I mean,
heard the moniker,
They're still very big, but at the time they sort of just started out. There was a painting guy called Lester Bursley. Who's the guy that did all the terrain? Oh, I can't remember. It was Luke. Luke APS. You know, there's channels like that that really got me into it. Now they've all sort of just disappeared, and you've got a very different landscape of channels nowadays, which do very different things. And back then they were more sort of vloggy type of channels, whereas now you get channels that are very sort of sophisticated. They've got, it's all like the razzmatazz. Oh, we're doing this, we're a big project, we're come follow me. Back then it was very, very, very simple stuff. And anyway, so I got into it through that, thinking, yeah, wow, this is really cool. So I then went and brought myself some Blood Angels, because Blood Angels were always my jam as when I was a kid playing second edition back in the day when I was 10 years old. So I thought, I'll get back into that and buy some Blood Angels. I think it was probably sixth edition at the time when that happened for Warhammer 40,000. Did that, and I didn't have any space at home, so I took it all to my granddad's house, and he had this this caravan outside his house that had all his art stuff in. So I chucked it all in there, and I started learning to paint again. So I was watching all these videos on how to paint, so I was using YouTube to sort of essentially upskill my knowledge of painting. So did that. I joined a hobby group in Bedford, because I live in Bedfordshire, and started going down to the club, went for the first time with no miniatures, watching everyone. Oh yeah, okay, this is happy. Yeah, I remember this. I kind of remember this, looks all familiar. And then started growing the army, and then started playing again. And I just got back into it, really loved it. We moved house, moved in with the wife. We had a bit of room, had somewhere to put my stuff and set up a painting table. She obviously thought I was crazy, but, you know, there you go, painting little figures. And I carried on watching these YouTube. Then I started falling into the historical stuff. So I started off, obviously, back in Games Workshop, as just mentioned. But I'm just trying to remember everything, how I did things. But as at the gaming club, we then started going into like War Machine and playing different games. And then that sort of pushed me down the route of, actually you can move away from Games Workshop. I didn't realize that. And then I found historical stuff. Then I started playing a lot of historical things and watching it on YouTube. And I found a guy called Leon T66. I don't know if you've heard of his channel. It's a really lovely little channel, and it's just a historical channel generally. Although he is doing the Call of the Crown challenge, I think he was a big Warhammer gamer in the past. And I was watching one of his videos, and he was saying, you know, if you're doing this hobby, why didn't you start a YouTube channel? It's a great way to show off what you're doing, you know, also just be sitting in the cabinet, and, you know, it's really easy. You just need a phone. And I was watching it thinking, do you know what? Yeah. It just got me sort of going, thinking, I think I could do that. I'll give it a go. So literally probably the next day I got my phone, I set it up in front of me or the table, and then just sort of talking about what I was doing. And I think I was doing ACW, 6mm ACW. I think it's one of the first videos on my channel, or maybe Napoleonics. I can't remember, one of the two. And then just started talking. And then from there, literally it's grown. And as the channel's grown and got, I'm going to say bigger, it's been very much a step by step. It's not being one of those channels that just explode. But I don't do that sort of content that would make it explode, if you know what I mean. It's not an exciting, wow, look at this, we're going to do a big game, I'm not very good at curating a video as such, but it's all, my channel's more really all about what am I doing in my hobby. You know, it's just showing off my wares, you know, this is how I do this, how would you do it, that sort of thing. So it was a very small, slow build. And as the channel's gone on, it's kind of progressed, and now it's sort of really sort of found its, I think it's found its niche in this old Hammer stuff, which is sort of, I'd say, third, fourth edition Warhammer, with a smattering of epic Space Marine and other sort of games like that. And that was kind of largely down to Josh, making good friends with Josh, and then sort of almost tagging on with him with some videos. So I do the live streams with Josh quite often. We both do the Mork and Gork videos we do with each other. So the channel has slowly found its way, but it's been going for, like, say, 6 years, did you say?
Yeah, that's what YouTube says.
Yeah, which is crazy. And yeah, so it was before the pandemic, and that's when there was this big resurgence with loads of new channels coming out in the pandemic, because obviously everyone had a bit of time to do something. And I think that's when a lot of the old guard disappeared, and you stop seeing some of these old channels that I grew up with, but watched to start with initially. So that's so that's kind of how I got into it. It's purely watching a video made me think I could do this, and I would recommend it to anyone who is sitting there pacing away and hasn't got a lot of opportunity to get out and game, because what it does do is it gives the opportunity to show off what you're doing. It gives you a reason to paint rather than just painting it and then putting it in a box, you know. And I know for myself, I don't get to game that often, so I want to be able to do something with it, you know. It's a nice way to show it all off.
I'm just making a wee note there to return to something.
No worries.
Given the illusion that I'm professional here making notes. So
definitely not professional on this end. That's
it's sure. Actually just that I'm a bit senile and I'll forget. if we like scroll back on your YouTube channel, it kind of tells a story, at least from what I could see. You know, we go right back and it's basically you start with this historical stuff. There's loads of beautifully painted like Napoleonics and that. And then what I kind of see scrolling back through time is like, we start to see Oathmark content and the miniatures you're using for that. It's the Fantasy 4th edition Goblin, Night Goblin Archer. So what's the story there? Like, you gradually start to incorporate first Oathmark, and then it looks like you're leaning into the GW nostalgia. So how does that kind of evolve?
Yeah, no, you're totally right. So as I was sort of saying, I suppose that sort of, there's an evolution within the channel. I was obviously doing the historical stuff, and I love historical gaming. There's some fantastic little games out there, and I love Bolt Action. It's a really lovely game. Black Powder, I never actually got to play it. I think that did kill me trying to paint the Napoleonics. If anyone's ever tried to paint a Napoleonic army, it is hard. But that kind of killed me a little bit. I did the 6mm ACW, and I really got into Bolt Action. But there was always this little itch of wanting to get back into fantasy or sci-fi gaming. That's what I grew up on. It's what I knew. And my friend James from Scruffy Crow, have you ever come across his YouTube channel?
No, again, no mark on him. I'm not much of a YouTube user, so...
No, it's okay, that's okay. So good friend of mine's, James, again, he's got a YouTube channel called Scruffy Crow. Really lovely channel, so if anyone wants to check it out, it just simply is Scruffy Crow. And basically, he's a great hobbyist, so his channel's all about putting things together, the project from start to finish, that sort of thing. Anyway, he got hold of this set from Osprey, isn't it? Osprey Publishing did it, the Oathmark, and he said, look, I really want to get back into a rank and flank game, and I've been reading these rules for Oathmark, and I think they're really good. And so I think it might have been one of the salutes one year we went down and picked up the rule set, got into it, and it is a beautiful little game. It really is. It's If you want a simple rank and flank, you will struggle to beat Oathmark. I know there's a few others out there. I know there's the recent one. Is it Hobgoblin?
Yeah.
I've heard really good things about that. I haven't played it, and I can't judge that because I haven't read the rules. But Oathmark itself is just a simplistic, beautiful, very. It's very sort of forgiving rule set. You know, you can once you've played one round, you've got the game. It's not full of magic items and items you stuff onto your units. It's a very nice interactive game, and I think it's I move a unit, you move a unit. I think so. It's that constant to and froing. We really got into it. So we started playing quite a few games. We did a little campaign, but. There, as you start as, and I use because I had this, what I had, I just had old Warhammer miniatures. As I was painting these miniatures, I started getting that itch to want to sort of fall back onto the Warhammer side of things, and especially after discovering Josh's channel, Crown of Command, and seeing him doing what he was doing with his stuff and how beautiful they looked, it really made me think, oh, do you know what? I miss those days. I want to relive that. So the channel then started to slowly progress from those type of games and fully sort of commit to the old Hammer, Warhammer, Hero Hammer, whatever you want to call it. It started to really commit into that. So then I fell into, so that then it's obviously that you then see more like, Warmaster. I do a lot of Warmaster stuff. I do a lot of Warhammer, and also I did a, which you might bring up, the project with the Howler Griffins for the 40k.
Yeah.
So that was the sort of the transition into it. But not to say that I wouldn't, I would have a pickup game of Oathmark anytime. It's such a good little game.
You still play it?
If I get the chance to. James moved up to Nottingham, so I don't, and it was him that I played it with, so when I get to see him we might have a game, but then there's when it's like there's loads of other games since then that we'd like to play or have a go at, so it's probably unlikely we'd play it, but I would play it if James said to me, let's play a game of Oathmark, yeah, let's play.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Well, you touched on the Howling Griffins, and I think anyone who grew up reading White Dwarf in the mid-90s would be familiar with that iconic army. Fred Reed, and I very nearly called him Mike Reed. Mike Reed's Howling Griffins, that's a different army entirely. So, tell us a bit about that then. What inspired you to take on this? Because I like, when I found the video on your channel, my first impression was that you'd interviewed Fred, but you've spoke to him too.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, so I'll need to check that out. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
So what will, talk us through the origins of that project, right through to the whole.
I think if there was anything to watch on my YouTube channel, this might be the one thing really to honest with you. It's, this was a labour of love. And it was essentially the first sort of project I did going down this rabbit hole of old Hammer style videoing. And I, as a kid, that battle rapport between the Howling Griffins and the Orcs was just something that stuck with me. I'd look at the pages, I'd look at the images of the Howling Griffin army. And do you remember I think one of the issues had the full army picture of the Howling Griffins where it was just the whole company. I mean, that just inspired me so much as a kid. I just longed to have that. And with that picture and the battle report, I always wanted something like that. And obviously as a kid, that's just not going to happen. It's just unachievable. So I had this idea. I think I might have been flicking through that particular book or something like that. And I come across and I thought, do you know what? I've always wanted to do this army. Why don't I, that might even be a good thing to do as a project on YouTube. So why don't I just give it a go? I had a really good start in terms of the miniatures because as a kid, I had the 40k box set plus I had like the Death Company set. I had a tactical company set. So that's quite a lot of Marines right there. So I got them, I stripped them all off because they were horrendously painted anyway, and then just reassembled them to fit what, as much as possible, the units that were in the battle report. So it was the Howling Griffin's battle report, so which was a tactical squad, a Devastator squad, there's a scout squad, there is a dreadnought, two librarians, and a captain. I think that's it. I think that's 2,000 points, or what, 1,500, or whatever it was that they played. And so I spent my time trying to find the rest on YouTube, on eBay. The captain is actually the 1991 Games Day special release. And my God, he's probably the single most expensive miniature I've ever bought. For just that size, I mean, he came in at like 50 quid. It was absolutely, and I wouldn't normally do it, but I really wanted to do this. I wanted to do this army. So I thought, so yeah, I'm going to splash out and get this guy to make sure I get him. So I picked him up. So I started filming myself painting it. I worked out the colour scheme, something that would work. I basically just copied everything that Fred did. So the colours, so even to the sort of the blue trims on the shoulder pads, rather than sort of more traditional where it's just, I think nowadays that those trims don't, you don't ever see them anymore on Howling Griffins, but so the blue trims on that. Yeah, and I was painted away, did video after video, just sort of showing off each unit. And eventually I got there. I think it must have taken me sort of 8 months to a year to do, through like trying to purchase the miniatures and obviously finding the time to paint them as well. And it was a grueling task painting yellow and red in quarters. You do get sick of it after a while.
You still dream about it.
Yeah, I do. it was a tough task. It was a tough ask, I tell you. But I got through it, completed it, and then I thought, right, I've got this army. I've done the army. And I was really happy with myself, but something just felt missing, and I looked at. You know, you get the army shot before the battle report on the White Dwarfs. And I thought, do you know what? That's what's missing. I need an army shot photo. And I'm like, bugger, but I haven't got a backdrop and I haven't got the battle bastion or whatever they're on. And I haven't got this, the trees. So I thought, right, bugger. So I'm going to have to make all this stuff as well and then do the photo. So I bought myself a big canvas and I did like a Bob Ross sort of style painting, which I've never done before in my life, and I'm rubbish, but I think I got away with it. It was just good enough maybe to have take a photo, and I made the bastion, the two bastions that are in that video, in that picture, and a few rocks and whatever. And then sat setting them up and took the photo and sort of obviously put it on YouTube, and you know, and I got a lot of love for it, which was lovely. You know, a lot of people really enjoying what I did. And the strangest thing was that somehow, I don't know how this happened, Fred Reed come across it, and he commented on my video, and he was saying, you know, I don't know, he said it was amazing. And so obviously, I was like, wow, bloody hell. So I messaged him back, and then he started talking to me. I was like, oh, fucking brilliant, amazing. As it transpired, we ended up meeting up on, much like this, a Teams call, and did a little interview with him. And he just went through how he had painted his. I sort of talked about how I painted mine, and he gave me this backstory about the game, and he gave me the backstory about what actually happened to the miniatures as well, because it's a bit of a sad story to what happened to his Howling Griffins. So if anyone wants to see that, it's on the channel, and it's not the best recordings, because on his side it was a bit crackly, but it's more than good. It's more than listenable. And if you're a fan of that particular White Dwarf, you'll want to listen to what he's got to say about it. And it's just real, it's real damn shame what happened to those miniatures. But anyway, so he was absolutely made up that I had sort of done like a bit of a homage to his what he'd done. And yeah, that was probably the biggest admiration I got. And then they actually got published in a very recent White Dwarf.
Wow.
They published the...
Yeah, that's incredible.
So they did a little write up about it.
And did you know that was going to happen?
No, I didn't. It was a friend of mine said, he texted me and said, "Oh, mate, well done." I was like, "Well done for what?" He goes, "You're in White Dwarf." I was like, "What? What?" And he goes, "Yeah, you're in White Dwarf." I was like, what issue? So I was scrambling around trying to find one, and I couldn't find it because I'd picked up the last month. So I was like, no, I'm not. Anyway, it was this particular one. I was, what issue was it? I think it's 510. Yeah, 500 and issue 510. And they published it, and they did like a little sort of homage to the past as such.
Yeah.
Which is quite nice. It's nice that they do that. It's nice that they still respect what they used to do, mm-hmm. And how different it is. And yeah, it's bizarre. I couldn't believe it. So that was really nice.
I mean, that is like, that's given, like, I'm not taking away from what you've done with that project because it's immense, but like, you think about the sheer amount of people doing really cool projects around their stuff, especially their modern stuff. So for them to have noticed that and actually made the decision to feature that is like no mean feat at all. It's incredible. Like how long ago was that?
This was in, so what's, I think it was, they did, it's March issue 510 in March.
Yeah,
I think that was it. That was this year. So yeah, it was quite some time after me doing the army. But I know it was this year.
And have you ever had any contact from them at all to let you know that it was there?
Yes, I did. I did get an email, but I didn't see it.
Right.
So they asked me, would it be possible? I didn't answer, and they just did it anyway. But
yeah,
but
their lawyer, I mean,
their lawyers are stronger than my lawyers. Yeah. Absolutely. to be honest with you, I would have said yes anyway. To be fair,
yeah.
So, so that was just I mean, that's probably like the highlight of my hobby career, getting published in White Dwarf. No, that was fun. It was nice to have some sort of recognition of the project, you know, because I worked really hard on it. I did my best to try and keep it as close to what Fred Reed did. There's only one miniature that's different. I think, which is the smaller of the two librarians. One's a librarian in Terminator armor, and one's just a normal librarian. The normal librarian, I couldn't for the life of me work out what he had done, because it definitely wasn't a model that you could buy, so it would have been some form of conversion, and I couldn't work it out. So in the end, I just got the old, do you remember the old Blood Angels librarian, the one with the beaky librarian, and I love that model anyway, so I just used that. And when I spoke to Fred, I did ask him about that, because I said that's the only one I couldn't sort of match or replicate, and he said that was a conversion. He said, oh, for the life of me, I can't remember what I did to that either. that's probably sort of the defining moment of my YouTube channel, that was. But you know, that really enjoyable project. A tough one. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone to paint in quarters like that for a whole army, but yeah, no, it was good fun.
Yeah, and for the listeners' benefit, obviously we'll put links to both your channel and that specific video in the show notes, and I'll be checking out myself, because like I say, I'd only seen your kind of project videos. I'd no idea you'd actually spoke to Fred, so I am intrigued to dig into that and find out. I mean, it's obviously quite a sad story given on what you're going by, but find out what...
It is, and bless old Fred. He's not a well person nowadays, I don't think, and he lives in the States now, and he keeps the hobby alive to some degree. He what he does now as a job, he does cosplay,
right?
But he does 40K cosplay, so he makes the costumes. So that's what he does. He produces the costumes for cosplay. He either sells the costumes or him and his wife go and do the cosplay. So you rent them out to go and do the cosplay at big conventions and stuff like that. So his art is still definitely going. It's just not in miniature form anymore, which is a shame because he was probably one of my favorite. And he wasn't even a painter. He was a store manager. But he got obviously published in White Dwarf quite a lot because he was quite a prolific painter. He had quite a few armies that got published. So obviously the Howley Griffins was one. I think he did a Chaos Army, and I think a lot of people will remember his Thunderhawk gunship, which he did, which I think might have been a Chaos one. Can't quite remember. So he was published in White Dwarf quite a bit. I think he has a little sort of cult following, old friend. He's not like Andy Chambers or someone where, yeah, everyone knows him, but if you're off the time, you know who Fred Reed is.
100%. Or in my case, Mike Reed. So the Howling Griffin stuff, obviously the marquee story of your channel, but your bread and butter seems to be the Thank Markets Friday videos. Talk to us a wee bit about them.
Yeah, so that's just started, to be honest with you. I think a lot of people think I've nicked it from Josh, because obviously Josh does his Thank Gorkits Fridays. And to be fair, I did.
I wasn't sure who was first.
Is the real truth. Josh, definitely.
Right.
I did one as a complete joke and a bit of a piss take to Josh, because Josh had just started them. And obviously we're good friends now. And I thought I'd do one as a bit of a joke. And I did this. And I called it Thank Markets Friday. And he come back to me laughing. He said, "Johnny, that was brilliant. I love it. You should just carry on doing it. You should keep doing them." I was like, okay, yeah, maybe I will. And actually, before then, I'd been having a massive lull in just getting videos out, because the big family life just gets in the way. It's, you know, trying to do any hobbies hard, let alone do hobby, edit videos, publish them. I'm sure you're probably, you know, feel the strain yourself with just editing all the things that you've got to edit to get your stuff out. And it's the same thing. So, and with three little tykes running around trying to demand your attention all the time, it's not an easy thing to do. But these Faint Gorkits Friday videos are just quite easy. There's very little editing involved, because I'm just talking to a camera and I'm just pointing at the desk. There's no trickery involved. There's no like trying to be like some form of, you know, wow. It's not a wow video that's going to get, I know it's not going to get thousands and thousands of views, but what it does mean is I get a video out every week and I stay within the community, and I think that's really important. And there's a lot of people now, I think, kind of expect them to come out. So now I've dug myself a bit of a hole. So now every week I'm like, rushing, quick, I've got to get it out. You know, on a Friday at 11 o'clock at night, trying to edit it, send. So it was born from a bit of banter with Josh and actually the realization of these are nice, easy videos to get out on the channel. And that's why they're sort of there. I do have plans on doing more dedicated painting videos, because I think a lot of the videos that do the best on my channel are painting videos. I'm hoping to get more games in as well. Whenever I get a game in, I always do like a battle report, so I'll try and get battle reports more on the channel as well. So it won't just be Faint Markets Fridays, but I'm trying to keep that as a constant. It just keeps the channel ticking over. And I don't know whether the algorithms have changed or not, but you definitely need to have some sort of consistency to be able to just even be shown. They're just sort of nice, easy things. And what I like about them is I get chance to give back to the community as well, because I do like a community page. So I show if you've come onto the channel and you've posted your pictures of what you've been up to. So I give a bit of a shout out to anyone who's been working hard on their projects, and they throw it onto my community page. I give them that. I, sh- tell who it is, and I sort of talk about their painting and all that kind of thing, which is, so that's nice. I was doing a beer of the week every week, but because I'm not drinking beer, I'm cutting that off at the moment. But and I'm replacing it with a YouTube channel of the week. So I'm doing some shout outs of what I think are some of my favorite YouTube channels that I think are lacking in terms of subscriptions or love, just because people don't know they're there. And if they did, they would definitely be watching them. So it's a bit of a community give back as well, which is nice about doing those Fake Mortgage Fridays. Yeah. But in essence, the answer to your question, it was just a piss take of Josh's Fake Gawk, and it ended up staying as a thing.
If you're one of those kind-hearted people who tips their servers, taxi drivers and bar staff, how about tipping your favourite podcaster too? And if you've any money left after that, how about tipping me? If you appreciate the work that goes into putting this show together, or if this episode's simply helping you to pass the time whilst you work, drive or paint, then you could leave a little something by going to bedroombattlefields.com/tip. That's bedroombattlefields.com/TIP. And now, back to the show.
Yeah.
It sounds like YouTube then, based on what you're saying, is supporting your hobby, it's supporting your accountability rather than getting in the way, because you do hear from some content creators who have to step away from documenting, creating stuff because it's taken over. Maybe they're too focused on getting stuff out that they're actually not enjoying it and they're not doing the things that they want to do in the hobby. Yeah. So have you found a good balance there?
Well, I would agree with you that. Okay, so my favourite, I watch YouTube a lot for hobby. So I enjoy creating it. I enjoy consuming it. And the channels that I enjoy watching are the channels that are giving me updates of what they're doing. You know, this is real. I am trying to paint this miniature, or I've just finished these lovely goblins. This is what I've done. Do you like them? I love them sort of videos because I feel immersed in someone else's hobby and they inspire me. I don't really enjoy these big channel videos. So I don't like to mention names because they're not bad channels. They're very good channels. They're obviously very big, but the channel's sort of like Midwinter Minis, that sort of thing, mini wargaming, where it's all a bit more about the production of the video. Razzmatazz, wow, look at this, we're doing it. They're great videos, don't get me wrong, and I've got nothing against them channels at all. I just personally don't enjoy that sort of content. I prefer the sort of more down-to-earth, rough and ready, this is what I'm working on, put comments in the below, what you think I can do to improve, those sort of things. And I think that's very much what my channel is about. It's a supplement to my, as you said, literally you're bang on, it's a supplement to my hobby. It's a way of expressing my hobby, it's a way of showing off what I do, because again, like I said earlier, I don't get to play that often, so I don't have that opportunity for people to go, oh, we've painted that, oh, I quite like that, or yeah, oh, I would have done this different. That doesn't happen very often, so you can I get that through the hobby, through YouTube. And I've definitely sort of created a bit, well, I've not created a community. There is a community out there that are willing to, they're extremely lovely, and they're willing to help. They're willing to give you good feedback, and they're willing to compliment where that's due. And it's nice. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it is a balance. I try not to, my hobby comes first. I try and paint first, then make video. I don't want to make the video for, I don't want to, what I don't want to do is have ideas for a video and then paint, if that makes sense. So I don't want it to be the overarching part of the hobby. I just want it to be a supplementation of the hobby. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, you literally, you summed it up for me, to be honest with you. It literally is, an extension of the hobby.
Yeah. And I mean, you did kind of say that, you know, doing a YouTube channel can be a great addition or supplement to your hobby. And I would say for anyone listening, like, if you start a YouTube channel, just pretend the algorithm doesn't exist, because you're owning your growth there, because like you're doing this YouTube channel of the week, and these, that kind of reciprocity and cross-pollination is the way to go. And you know, if you really want to get into the algorithm game, you can't only pick the hobby. You've got to pick a subset of that and then a subset of that. And you niche down so far that you've no freedom. There's a counter argument that constraints is creative freedom, but don't play the algorithm game.
No, don't. I mean, if you want to play the algorithm, don't do hobby videos. Yeah. Because you're not going to get that far. But I mean, my channel is a good example of that, because I've been doing it for like, say, 6 years, and I've only got 3,200 subscribers. Now, if I was chasing the algorithm, I'd be a little bit worried, because that's not that many, really. Especially when you've seen some channels, they've only just started, and wow, bang, they're at 10,000. You're like, how has that happened? But you know, you can't question it. You've got to do it for the love of doing it, and for wanting to either show off what you're doing, or maybe you are creative with creating videos and stuff like that, and you want to make videos. That whatever the reason to get onto YouTube is, it shouldn't be. It's not fair to, in my opinion, it shouldn't be to chase the algorithm and to try and get as many subscribers as possible. It should just be for the love of it. And if, you know, like I say, if I was worried about that, I'd probably have given up ages ago, because, you know, I just get dribs and drabs here and there. People join, people find me, they either like it, they don't like it, and they move on. But I'm okay with that. I just want to use it as a way to, I tell you what it is good for, Matthew, is remembering your painting recipes. If you do painting videos, I just go back and go, I can't remember how I paint this goblin. Oh, I did a video on that. Oh, yeah, there you go. Watch my own videos. That's fucking sad, isn't it?
No, and that's maybe one sole reason I need to start doing it myself, because I'm guilty of that.
Yeah, there's no reason to have a book anymore to write down recipes. Just watch a video.
I know I've often done this in the past with folks at the start of the episodes, but yep. I wanted to dig into the recent stuff first, but let's in the time we've got left, dig into your origin story. Like, when did you come across the hobby to start with?
I'll never forget it. It's weird, isn't it, right? If you're in this hobby, there's something in your DNA, isn't there, that just this hobby sticks to. And you can't get rid of it. And I'll never forget finding it for the first time. And actually, I sort of discovered it twice without realizing. The first time, so both times, was through my cousin. He is about 5 or 6 years older than me. And he was prime for the HeroQuest, because I think it obviously came out in the late 80s. He was prime for HeroQuest, and he had a box set of HeroQuest. And he got me playing this game, HeroQuest, and I was like, oh, this is brilliant, I love this. But I didn't really know what it was, and it doesn't, unless you own the box, which I didn't, because he had it, I wouldn't have found like the GW slips and stuff. So it wasn't until he then got Epic Space Marine, and he got me playing that on his floor in his bedroom. And from that day, I was just hooked. Like, look at that, the Titan, these little guys, wow, like, it's just that sort of mind exploding, like, and I could really immerse myself into it, imagining being there. We didn't have a nice green table or anything, it was all on the floor with books and stuff, but I could imagine, I could just be there and imagine it. I was like, wow, this game is the best game I've ever found. So literally I went home that day and said to my mum, I want this for Christmas. I think they're a bit bamboozled, which is what it really was. Sure enough, that year I got that for Christmas. And yeah, I then sort of progressed from there. I was been about 10, 9 or 10. I think it had been like 90, it must have been like 92 or something like that.
Halcyon days.
Yeah. And then it progressed to 40K, as you do as a kid. But then I stopped. I literally, you get to 15, 16, you realise it's pretty young. It's pretty young. Yeah, back then it was uncool anyway. It's not so much anymore. I think it's a very different story for kids at school nowadays with gaming. But back then it was very, very, very uncool. If anyone knew that you did it, you might get a bit of a nudge or a push. You know, it's one of them, wasn't it? So so you didn't tell anyone. It was like that unspoken love that you never want to talk about. So I left it, put it to one side, all went into boxes, got decrepit. A lot of it got thrown away from my mum. You know, it's just one of those things. And then it wasn't until, again, which I probably mentioned earlier, which I didn't mention earlier, is when I then started YouTubing it again, back when I was sort of in my late 20s, sort of 26, 27. And that's when I then got back into it again. So I left it for a long time and obviously missed a lot. And I think I've heard someone else say this before, and it's true. I come back to it. When I come back to it, I did have this feeling of, I remember this, I love this, but it's not quite as I remember it, because I remembered it as like second edition 40K or fourth edition fantasy, whereas it's obviously progressed a lot more. The miniatures have changed. It's got, you know, especially now, if I got into the hobby again now and went to Games Workshop, I wouldn't recognize it at all, because the miniatures are completely different. They're completely different games, essentially. So that, again, that's probably one of the things that got me back into doing the old hammer, is just the strong nostalgia pull. So for me, it really was, I never worked at a Games Workshop, and I never really played that many games as a kid, because as a kid, I didn't really have anyone that played it. But it was my cousin. Yeah, it was my cousin that got me into it. And so he's got, every year we do a family get together for Christmas. It's like a big family thing. It's on my dad's side. He's always there. Every year I always try and pester him, because he's got all the stuff still up in his attic. I'm like, can I have your stuff, please? Problem is, though, he knows how much it's worth now, so yeah. he won't give it to me. But yeah, it was. I'll never forget those days of going around his house, and I used to beg my mum, "Can we go to my cousin's house?" Because I wanted to get round and play this game, which sort of mesmerised me. And that particular game was Epic, and to this day, Epic is epic. It is such a fantastic game. In my opinion, Games Workshop's best game, hands down, because it's easy to do. They're only 6 mil. They are 6 mil, aren't they? So they're relatively easy to paint. You just have to throw some blobs of paint on and they're done. The rules are simple, and it just looks amazing. I was actually lucky enough, and I really ought to get back in contact with him to do it again. But I actually met up with AD Wood to play a game of Epic, there was a little battle report actually on the channel for it. And that was amazing. Just playing Epic with someone who really knows the rules and who has an absolute love for it as well. And obviously has the history side behind that with Games Workshop as well. That was really fun. So quest answer to your origin story, it was through my cousin. It's quite a boring origin story, really, because like I say, I very much stopped at once I got to teens. I never worked in a Games Workshop or anything like that. So yeah, it wasn't until I sort of got back into it though, the hobby really flourished for me. So this is, I'd say really now is when I'm properly discovering it. I've learned how to paint. I've learned there's not just Games Workshop. There's a whole plethora of games out there. There's these horror historicals. There's independent games. Like, my God, there's an independent game coming out every week nowadays, isn't there? It's you can't keep up with it, which is fantastic. Which just shows how the hobby is growing, and I think more and more people are getting into it. Especially, it's a great way to get away from technology, isn't it? And I think more people sort of are realising this. It's such a great thing to be part of.
Absolutely, and it sounds like you're living the dream, playing games with AD Wood, chatting to Fred Reed, painting your own Howling Griffins. Imagine telling yourself that when you were 12 or whatever.
Yeah, do you know what? Yeah, you're right. Because you see these people with the magazines, and they were like gods, weren't they? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, maybe I am living a dream. I don't know. I don't figure it like that. But I don't know. I think nowadays, though, the community is so. Those guys are all sort of so willing now, aren't they, to get involved? Like you, I mean, I've been listening to your podcast, and obviously Rick Priestley doing that with you guys. You know, that wouldn't have happened probably back in the 90s, because they would have been working for Games Workshop. They probably would have been allowed. So that all everyone back then are now sort of are sort of part of the community now, aren't they? Whereas maybe they weren't once upon a time, which is brilliant, because they're bringing this whole new wealth of knowledge. We're getting the stories, we're getting the all the jokes and stuff that sort of happened with them back then, which is lovely to hear. And yes, it was through Josh that I was able to meet up with AD. Josh was definitely the catalyst for that, which was lovely. He sort of put us into contact because he knew that I wanted to play Epic and AD was getting back into it, and he wanted to play Epic, so he just sort of put us together. So yeah, bit lucky in that sense, but you know, it's a good time. It's a really good time to be in the hobby, isn't it? You know, you only have to look at things like Boyle and how that's just growing massively. I think next year is probably going to be the biggest year, isn't it? I think there's a lot of people going to be ascending over there. I think they're going to be inundated this year.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.